This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, and all y'all. You know what I'm saying? I'm Jeff Vader from Vader Knives. I'm here with the great Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts. And Craig is in the middle of a huge festival.
He's partying.
He's partying. He's playing to thousands of people. He's living this incredible life, and it's like, can you stop him? You shouldn't. You shouldn't
He's
stop him.
Draining bottles of Scotch whiskey right now.
Let him His do. Favorite. He don't. You come on now. We've been doing this for almost 400 episodes. We all know you don't like that brown liquor. You know my boy don't like that brown liquor.
White boy and his white drinks.
Yeah, that's it. White boy and the white drinks. I think we have an episode.
Of that. Yeah, title already. Title, right off the kick.
In this day and age, I'm not 100% sure. But regardless, we're here every week on Monday. This is actually episode 399. We got to talk about the 400th episode up. But you weren't here last week, and you were traveling. You were in Minnesota. Tell us all about it.
Yeah. Okay, so Minnesota was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Minnesota... I don't know. It's a gem. Obviously, the winters are super fucking tough, but holy shit. Summertime, springtime, early, like late summer, early fall. Fucking beautiful, man. It is crazy out there. So I was asked to come out to an event called Burgertopia. And it was a fundraising event for my friend Kate Meyer's company. Let's see. Her company is Craft Made Aprons. I collaborated with her for my Banff apron, and I actually had a meeting with her after all was done, said and done with the event, regarding a version 2.0 of the Banff apron. But that's all I got to say about that for now. But anyways, she has a nonprofit organization called Help the House. And so basically, it's a nationwide program, and they raise money to help people who work in the restaurant service industry. And it's, you know, a lot of people who work in that industry don't necessarily have, or very few, I think, actually have like their own like health insurance or dental insurance and all this extra. And, you know, it's a tough living working in the restaurant business. I did it for several years, and it's most people are just getting by. And so what this foundation does is like, if somebody suddenly needs help with dental work, or they have a kid and they suddenly have like, they don't have the money to, help cover kind of like childcare or even seeking some sort of like help in kind of like a reimbursement in a way, because, last minute emergency funds are getting used, and then now their monthly whatever their nut has been fucking dwindled by a few hundred dollars. That fucking hurts when you're living paycheck to paycheck. But anyways, right now they're working with some, they have a bunch of different people they're helping right now, but like examples, they got somebody who's going through cancer treatment, and it's fucking expensive. And so they're helping to, cover some of those, treatment costs and just stuff like that. So anyways, the Burgertopia was at this, microbrewery in Minneapolis called Modest. It's actually kind of in downtown, Minneapolis. And dude, every beer I had there was fucking crazy. I actually wasn't expecting a whole lot from them, because I think there's a lot of microbreweries and companies around the country who are like, we make great beer. People just too excited. I have friends actually who brew their own beer, and they get a little too high on their own supply. And then I tasted them. I'm not the end all be all judge, but I know what I like. But I'm like,
but you know good beers. You drink Gabe's beers or Anchor's, and you got all these beer guys. So I'm sure you get a lot of good stuff.
Super solid. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I'm sure you get a lot of stuff. So you didn't have. So the beer was good. You were surprised, and it was good.
Well, and I come from the beer capital of the country on the West Coast. Yeah, in the Northwest, Portland, Seattle, but. So there's a lot of really great beers readily available. And I was shocked. I was pleasantly surprised by the quality of the flavors and all the creative flavors they came up with. It was really good. But so that, they hosted this thing. They had like tattoo artists host, like set up in one part of the brewery. So they're doing all these like kitschy burger like tattoos. Uh-huh. All the sales from the beer that day, all the tattoo, like all, everybody was volunteering their stuff. The food was donated. That was being cooked by six different restaurants. Some were like brick and mortar restaurants, some were pop-ups or trucks. And all the money that went from to like the entry fees to getting in went to help the house, to,
that's nice.
To help the raise funds basically for it. So they donated their day. Everybody volunteering and everything, like everything was donated. And so I was asked to come out and do some forging demonstration, and I employed a few friends of mine. My friend Rich Patterson and Jason Krause. Jason Patterson's Patterson Blades on Instagram. Jason Krause is North Star Forge. Both local guys, actually, to the area. I really like events like that, especially when they ask me. But I'm like, obviously, I'm from Washington State, so my goal is like, all right, let's pull some of the local guys that are in the area and help, like, connect them better with their local community.
Great.
And Sam was also there. Sam used to work with Alex Steele and Will Stelter when Alec had like the Alex Steele company, and they were making all the hammers and stuff.
Sam Wandeshand, something like that.
Yes,
something like that.
It sounds like he just made up some.
No, that's his name. It's something like that.
Sorry, Sam, if you're hearing this.
Yeah,
Sam's a great guy. He's super talented.
Ain't listen to this. Sam's the man.
He's a very talented blacksmith. He was out there showing some kind of like standard kind of forging techniques and stuff like that. He did like a horse head bottle opener, and he was doing all kinds of fun stuff. So we all each kind of like, it was a 4-hour event. We each took an hour to do some forging demonstration, and while everybody else was kind of like talking to different people, and we had a tent and we had a table and some stuff out on the table, and it was good. It was a really great event. It was very positive, I think, all around. Everybody felt like it was a good use of their time. And I feel like I'm talking really fast. But anyways,
I have a question for you.
It was good.
What's up? I have a question for you.
It's here.
Number one, I almost went to college in Minneapolis. I almost went to McAllister College.
Okay.
That was there was a very short period of time. I visited a friend of mine who was staying with a friend of mine who was in Minnesota. I liked it a lot. It was cold, though.
Yeah.
Here's the question I have. Based off of, you know, we talk on Knife Talk about the knife community, and we have such great listeners who are submitting questions about knife making, and a lot of them are learning how to make knives on YouTube and on Instagram, and then they'll try it, and then they slightly investment. Do you think the beer community is very similar, where it's like Craig all of a sudden, you know, he's got like a whole fucking vat system going on over there?
Yeah.
Do you feel like the home brew community is very similar to the knife making community as they start to watch a couple videos and a couple things and they buy a couple things?
I think there is a similarity. I think somebody like Gabe Fletcher is actually a better person to ask, but he has said to me before that the knife community reminds him a lot of the brewing community, because there are, even though people are technically competing, they're also very friendly. They share, they talk, they do collaborations, they teach each other stuff, and so he's obviously way deep in the brewing community.
I bet.
For like the last fucking 20, 30 years or something like that, 25 years. And so he's drawn a lot of parallels between the brewing community and the knife making community.
But there's a huge difference, because, you know, with a knife, you sell one knife and then, you know, that's the knife that somebody gets for the duration of their life. Versus a beer, you can make a change. You know, you have one beer and like, well, maybe this one's a little too hoppy. Let's throw in a little bit of this and that and the other thing. And you can kind of change the complexion of your beer very quickly, to the point where, you know, your customer doesn't really realize it, maybe from one beer to the next. I mean, you buy one beer and you're like, I'm never buying another beer from this person again. As opposed to like, you can change the, you get a bad batch and that's that's just the way it is. Versus like, if you need to, as a knife maker, it's kind of a more, it's probably a harder to make that transition in terms of the direction that you're going.
Well, I think you've talked about it in regards to approaching this work sometimes. or trying to approach this work as an artist, is the micro evolutions. And I think it's the same thing that happens with brewing. You know, I'm sure that you got to start, everybody's got to start somewhere, no matter what your discipline or practice is, but you eventually kind of just slowly evolve. You make different choices, you get different tooling, and it affects the way that you work and you make things. You change the way you sculpt handles, and maybe over a 5-year period, you end up ultimately losing in your handle sculpting like an extra 16th of an inch or a millimeter off the handle, just to kind of like finesse things just a little bit. And those tiny micro evolutions, even playing with the grinds or how thin you're taking the edge. You know, maybe you're 20 thousandths at the edge before you sharpen a knife, and eventually you're getting down to like 5 to 10 thousandths. But getting it down to that point, it took me like 3 years to really get down, and I'm still kind of pushing my geometry or doing different kind of compound grinds, or playing with just all kinds of different aspects. And it's the same thing with patterns and all of this, all these micro evolutions. I think lots of different disciplines go through that same practice, but it's being paying attention and being observant. And I think that's what makes it a practice and interesting.
The beer thing is interesting because you have the ability, I would imagine you have the ability to make changes. My father was a winemaker. And it's a little bit different, especially if you're growing the grapes, because you're at the mercy of whatever the grapes are. So when I say that, I mean, like, it could be a very sunny summer, and then the residual sugar level in the grapes are higher than if it was a really wet summer where there are a lot of leaves, and then maybe you need to prune them back to make sure they get more sun, and you're not getting much sun, so you're getting a much less sweet grape. And then you have to make the decision at the harvest based off of, are we adding sugar, or it's a different mindset, because your vintage is based off of that year's crop versus with beer, you know, unless you're growing all the product, you can just like kind of adjust your and I don't no idea all you beer guys I don't know I'm just assuming you buy your hops, you buy your thing, you get your fucking kettle and your this and that and your pump and your fucking bottle,
playing with different temperatures. Obviously you got to work within particular ranges, but you know, playing with your temperatures, playing with the quantity of different ingredients. I mean, honestly, even though a steel is called 1084 from batch to batch to batch, chemically speaking, they can vary a bit or enough to where one can take a hormone and a different one cannot. And I think every time you get a bunch of steel from wherever you're ordering it from, it does not hurt to do a little bit of testing each batch of steel to just kind of dial in where things are at and what that steel is capable of before you move forward, especially if you're doing production, doing a bunch of knives. Now, obviously, like, I think there's some flexibility, and I think there is in brewing and other disciplines as well, but to really get that dialed in, I think speaks to a level of not necessarily integrity, but maybe obsession in regards to the quality of your work and like what it and what that work represents to you, and yeah, I guess your level of dedication to trying to put out the best product you possibly can.
Which community do you think is cattier? And you know what I mean, cattier.
I think they're the same.
The knife making community, or the beer making community. Yeah, well, cattier?
I think the beer making community. You know, it breaks down those social anxiety walls maybe sometimes for people or for a lot of people, and a lot of things come out. But
so,
I think
they're easier to talk shit.
Sure,
beer guys are more open about
what they're feeling. Yeah, but you get into the knife making community, I think, you know, I think perception wise, knife making is seen as like a tough guy's or manly or, you know, very masculine pursuit. But a lot of us are very sensitive people who are making something that we're pouring our heart and soul into, and then we're very sensitive to receive critiques or feedback. And I've always been told that we're a very sensitive group of people.
I don't think that knife makers are more. I think that I would say that most people who are in some sort of craft where it's a very specified craft, I would say that most people in that craft who are, you know, very, you know, specific in a niche group, all of them are very sensitive.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I mean, I'll never forget when I had a studio in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and we had, I've said this before, I'll say it again, we had a open studio. The building was crawling with artists.
Right.
We all had studios there, and we were all going to open. Everyone agreed, except for this one woman who was a very famous cover of Art of America. I was her assistant for a while. She was incredibly famous. And she goes, I'm not opening my door to the public. And we're like, dude, you're the most famous fucking person here. You're like you were like the most famous person by like universes than any of us.
Okay.
And we're part of us were just like kind of, you're not gonna help us, gonna bring people in. But then she was just then she said, this is my safe space. I'm very sensitive, and I'm very sensitive when people walk into my safe place and they cast aspersions or anything like that. And I feel as though anybody who does something where you really believe in what you're doing and you really feel very strongly about what you're doing and you feel like it's this real part of who you are and you identify it as being your art, of course you're going to be sensitive to critique, because obviously that sensitivity is translated from this concept of I know I'm doing the right thing and you're focused on doing this thing, and then all of a sudden new eyes come in and saying, why are you doing it like that? It's terrible. And you're just like, it's the whole idea of have I been doing this all wrong? I can't trust my own brain? What's wrong with me? I'm terrible. This is awful.
I think it's a balance between I think we're all trying to do the best we can with what we got, but at the same time, being open to some feedback, I think, is very helpful. Whether it's directly from somebody or even just looking at other people's work and making your own kind of like judgment calls in regards to your work compared to them. It's hard to be gentle on yourself when you feel very emotionally invested in the work that you're doing, especially if you see this as a passionate pursuit rather than a business. Now, I think it's good to still have some emotion in business, but you do have to cut some of that out, right? For it to be, to make a good business out of the work,
right?
The best knife makers that I know that are killing it in business, they have a lot of emotion removed from it, and I think that's fair, in parts of what they're doing. And then there are other parts of what they're doing where they're very heavily invested, but they don't treat that work the same. And so it's compartmentalizing in a way.
If I was going to give some feedback right now, I would give some feedback to our guys at Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Ain't get much better than them. And if you want to see what it looks like to be the finest heat treat ovens available, you go to evenheat-kiln.com. You get that solid state drive. You get that tap control. If you're going to heat treat stainless or anything that needs a specific temperature, Evenheat's not playing. We do need to talk about next week's episode, which is the 400th episode. I don't know if you know that or not. 400 episodes. And I've been slowly compiling. First of all, as I got to say, I got to preempt this by telling our audience, we wouldn't be here without you, right? I mean,
correct.
For all that 400 episodes, all the wonderful questions and feedback and jokes and silly things that people have been writing us, and even the Magna Carta people. Thank you. We're with you. We're 100%
Magna Carta Mafia.
Magna Carta Mafia. But you know what the funny thing is I still get, people still send the Magna Carta. What they do is they'll send me just, you just can't, here's the problem. All right, so I'm saying thank you to our lovely listeners, and I'm not bashing you right now. But what I'm saying is for years, I'm like, you have to understand when you write us something, you want to make sure that when we read it, it sounds legible. Because if it's a long thing, we're not all we're all not like actors. We're not all
not Shakespearean orders.
We don't read audiobooks for a living. You know what I'm saying? We're like, if it's too long, it doesn't sound good. So I always say, don't send us the Magna Carta. And then people will still, and then what they'll do is they'll write us, they'll write some sonnets, and it's a whole nine yards. And then at the end saying, sorry for the Magna Carta. Don't say sorry for the Magna Carta. Just break it. Just give us the, cut out the ums and the ahs and the you knows. And then he said, and then I said, and then just, fucking give me some bones. But I don't mean to crack on our audience, obviously. God damn it, Jeff. So, but if it wasn't for you, the audience, we wouldn't be able to have all the great content we have. You guys send us some great stuff. So what we're going to try to do for next week is I'm already compiling. We have got great feedback from people. If you follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, then you can send us your questions. You can send us your feedback. You can send us your messages. We got microaggressions. We got all this stuff. And then you can send us your favorite bits from the show over the past, I guess it's 8 years, dude, because it's like,
yeah,
if we got 52
2018 episodes, is when you and I joined.
Is that 2018? So 2018, 2019, 2000, well, it's not 8 years.
Are you counting fingers and toes?
I mean, I'm trying.
You got enough?
I mean, yeah, I do, but I mean, I got stuff in my hands, so it's hard for me to stick the fingers out. You know, it's hard for me. I don't have my shoes on. I got my shoes on. You know what I'm saying? So here's the thing. We've been doing this for a long time, and if you have any moments that you really loved on the show, let us know. I've already got a list of them, and I'm trying to figure out how we can actually try to play them.
Favorite moments
of the show. I think that you and I should try to just off the bat, do you have any favorite moments from the show that you can think of?
I mean, we had a really good laugh over the Ben Jammin' Cocker, and that's
dude, that might be number one, dude. That might be number one. I'll never forget. Yeah. So just to set up the story, and I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. So what happens is, you know, you guys send in your messages, and then I try to put in the your whatever your at is, whatever your Instagram at is, so I can shout you out. And you know, we're trying to read. And this is you know whatever. And it was the name. Guy's name was Benjamin Coker, or something. Benjamin Coker. Yeah. And Mareko starts in, and he gets Benjamin Cocker, and Craig just lost it. And then I lost it. When Craig laughs, I laugh. And then you were annoyed because we were both like, we couldn't stop laughing. And no. The messages we received from Benjamin Cocker was probably unbelievable, to the point where I know that the Workford guys, they had a guy at one point, they had a guy named Benjamin on their show, and they called him Benjamin. Yes. So I'm convinced that that was inspired by Benjamin Cocker. That was going to be a hard one to beat. That'd be a hard one to beat.
It was a good one.
Oh, God. That's the thing, that the things that when we all start laughing and it's like, you know, it's like this uncontrollable. I got messages from guys who said, I laughed so hard I almost crashed the car, Benjamin Cocker.
Oh, yeah.
When Sunset Forge used to listen to the podcast, he wrote to me, he says, I've never laughed harder on a podcast than Benjamin Cocker. Never in my life. And he just kept, and I think he even time stamped it. he timestamped when it was, and Kyle Heath sent me the timestamp. I'm going to see if we can take some of these. It's between me and Craig trying to figure it out. I'm going to try to see if we can timestamp some of these great moments and play them, and then we can kind of talk about them. But so Benjamin Cocker, what else? What else you got?
I don't know.
Cypress in the Morning. That might be one of my favorite things of all time.
Yeah.
Cypress in the Morning. God damn it. Apparently there was one where I was getting, you weren't there, I was getting very deep about something, and Craig had to stop the show because he had to take a massive shit.
Oh yeah, that was just like a couple months ago, wasn't it?
No, it was like a couple years ago, damn you. He didn't have to, he stopped that, he doesn't do that anymore. He wears a diaper now with me.
No way, I thought, he I was swear to
over
God,
a,
it was
over
a
year
ago.
Over a year ago. Over a year ago.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it was great. It was really funny, and I was just like, "What do you mean you got to go take a shit?" And then I had to like, "Don't you turn this off? I gotta." And then I had to vamp for however many minutes, and then we created a new style of time based off of how long it takes for Craig to take a shit. There you go. That was good. So, guys, send in your favorite moments of a Knife Talk, or if something's happened, or something happened, or you had to explain something to somebody, why you walked in, and apparently there was one episode where, I won't go into it, I'll save it for next week, but there was one really horrible episode, and somebody walked in while we were talking some mean, weird shit, so it was a lot of explaining to do. So go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and that's where you can send us your messages or your feedback or whatever. So we have questions, and we have feedback, and whatever you want to do.
Yeah, let's just jump into some questions. Yeah. It looks like we got the first one's the audio question.
All right,
from our guy Rick Elm at DIY.
I'm getting there.
DI Knives.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Rick Elm's the man, and here's what Rick Elm has to say.
All right, Knife Talk. This is DI Knives, Rick Elm, California. right next to the forge, about to do a feather Damascus split.
I can hear it. He's right next to the forge.
Have to take a piss always right before this happens. What do you guys think? Keep doing what you're doing. You guys are awesome. Later.
Wow, was that unbelievable? With the it really sounded like it really got you in the mood. Yeah. I mean, not the pissing part, but the forge. The forge. That was really, that sounded like a real powerful forge. That had a lot of power out of it. Yeah, that sounded like a 3-burner forge.
I think he might. I think he has an Apollo. I can't remember. I worked out of the forge. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
But he's Rick Elm was out there with Running Man Forge and all of our guys out there.
Librato Forge.
Librato. He's that guy. You ever have to go to the bathroom?
That has happened to me so many times.
Really?
Yeah, I put steel in the forge, and I can feel it, but it's like, oh, it's off in the distance. And then just before it's time to start, and it's usually like a pretty critical one, like the first or second forging round where I'm welding up the steel. All of a sudden, I'm like, God damn it. I feel like I had to take a piss. But I got to wait it out. Or here's the move. Or you dial back the temperature on the forge. You go take care of business, and then you come back.
I'm surprised because I've definitely, the only times I and first of all, I'm super duper, and this is something we're at the Center for Metal Arts. There's nothing worse than when a student puts a knife into a forge and walks away.
Oh, yeah.
That is like verboten. That's the worst. Any kind of steel, actually. When Hoff used to teach and we were just using regular steel, he'd be furious if somebody put their steel into the forge and took a leak. But if you're working on like a hammer or a giant billet and it's ice cold and you put it in, I mean, you don't have to stand there the whole time, especially if you, unless your bathroom is like, you know, a mile away, it's a different situation.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, when I'm forging, I never feel the need to have to go to the bathroom. But if I do, I'll always take it out of the forge and then just, you know, or I'll forge it down and then forge whatever I can on that heat, get as much of that heat as possible, and then put it to the side and then go to the bathroom and then start in again when I come back. But
sure. I will say, if you are setting the initial weld on steel, you do not want to walk from that, or you don't want to set that weld and then leave it to air cool. You want to put it back in the forge. You want to give it that time, because that's actually probably one of the most critical moments is after you set that weld, because up to that point the steel is close and it's touching, but it's not touching at an atomic level. And after that, you set that first compression, now those pieces are physically in contact with each other at the atomic level.
It's
at that point you put it back in the forge. It's got the heat and the carbon or the atoms between the pieces start passing back and forth between those weld boundaries, and that's where you start to establish that diffusion welded bond. But the only way you can do that is when the billet's hot, and so you don't want to set that weld and then leave it laying out. I will say also, I know when people are, or at least in general, I think blacksmiths have a tendency to run their forges quite a bit hotter than most of the knife makers I know, at least me. I'm running my forge at only like maybe 2100, 2150, which is kind of on the cooler side, especially for making Damascus and stuff. It's definitely, I mean, I'm getting all my shit to stick, so it's fine. But a lot of forgers, and actually knife makers too, are running probably closer to 2300, 2400 degrees. Which is fine for most stuff, but you don't want to leave it and walk away, especially it's a blade shaped piece of steel, because it's going to heat up real damn quick.
And all right? That scale, every time there's scale, that's one less bit of carbon in your knife.
Yeah.
It's the slow creak of less and less every time.
Yeah.
You know what you got to do? And this is something I've thought about it. I thought about it because our man Jesse Savage has a shop in Vermont, and he is unbelievable. And what Jesse's done, because he only uses coal. He's like traditional. Yeah. I mean, he loves coal. Loves coal. Loves it.
Very talented.
But with coal, you have to super duper not walk away. Because coal, if you have the blower going on and you got that coal hot, you'll turn your piece of steel into some melt. You get some, you end up, you make a clinker. You make a clinker like you wouldn't believe. You want to talk, this is what everybody's, all these, Will Stelter and all these guys are making these giant forged ashtrays. Somebody got to make a clinker mold at the bottom of their thing and make some clinker ashtrays, because like you want to make some, you want to melt some steel, go use a fucking coal forge with a blower, go on a full blast. Sure. So here's what Jesse did. Jesse put a urinal right on the wall next to the forge.
Okay.
So he ain't going any, if he got to take a whiz, he's just turning his body. He ain't even walking anywhere. Yeah. Ain't the door, nothing. Okay. He has got a urinal right next to the forge. Because he knows.
Makes sense.
If I go take a leak, it's all over. It's all clinker.
Yeah.
It's all clinker.
I will say, in one of my shops that I had, the shop before Dragon's Breath Forge, the bathroom was like a 200-yard walk from the shop.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had a bucket with a lid.
Ooh, ew, grotesque.
No.
A closed bucket?
Yeah. Well, I rinse it out like every day, but... Mm. It's fuck, dude. Sometimes you can't leave the shop, or fucking you gotta bucket, go. Huh?
You filling that bucket up?
No,
just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
You put a little, put only a little urinal cup, little urinal cakes.
You got a piss kink. What are you doing here?
I'll tell you my biggest problem. What I had, and I'm sure that this is a problem that a lot of guys who are working out of the garage are. If you got a garage or a shed, obviously you don't have a bathroom, so. If you're working and you're disgusting, you don't want to go, you know.
I know exactly where this is going.
And if you're going in the house, you don't want to get your boots on. You don't want to be dragging all that steel into the house. That's no good. So you end up taking a leak in the backyard, right?
Oh yeah.
Right. I mean.
Oh, I thought you were going somewhere else.
Where am I going?
Well, I know of guys who've had like work sheds. Like you, when you first started out, you were in a shed, right?
Yeah.
Which is like a fucking fill funnel, like for filling your oil, and a tube going through a hole in the wall.
I tell you what, I find the idea of actually, even when you're driving and you have to take a leak in an empty bottle, I find it to be so disgusting. Even afterwards, like you have this capped up jar of whiz. And I'm like,
you don't keep it.
Well, I mean, you don't fling it out the window, do you?
Dude. There's so many truck drivers around.
Well,
here.
That's me. I'm not a truck driver. Number one is I don't want to hold a body temperature bottle of liquid in my hand and then knowing where it came from. I don't want that in my life. God
put
forbid
it in your cup holder.
God forbid I, you know, accidentally make a mistake. I gotta avoid a pothole. And next thing you know, I'm taking a leak all over the bottom of my car. I hate that. I won't do it. but I had, when I'm in my shed, I'm not going to go in the house because Hillary's going to kill me. So I would go to the back and I go into the bushes and I take a leak.
Right next to the bald-faced hornets?
Actually, where the bald-faced hornets were, before the bald-faced hornets were there. Good, I had, yeah. So, and I remember thinking, no one's going to see me. It's fine. I'm in the viburnum. No one's going to see me. And then I guess I was very, I was a little too casual about it. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I was a little, I took
there,
for
your
granted.
Pants already off.
I took, my pants were off. What do you think? I'm waddling into the backyard with my pants around my ankles trying to get to the back of the shed, back of the property? No. But the problem was I, you know, you're in your mind and you've done it once, you've done it twice, you know no one's watching, and you know people can't really see through your, you know, backyard and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm trying to be conscientious. I'm not wearing like a neon shirt or something like that saying, hey, I'm taking a leak. And I remember one of our old neighbors saw me, must have saw me, figured it out. I mean, figured out what I was doing. You know, I'm right face to face with this bush. And I'm standing there and my hands are not down on my sides. They're obviously, you know, in front of me. So she can, it's not hard to figure out what you're doing, even though she can't see my penis, she can know what I'm doing. Right.
So instead
of just like being like, let's just forget about it. And she's looking through another person's yard and seeing me there.
Is she looking through fence boards or over the top?
No. She was on the second floor of her house and she was, her house was higher up on the hill than ours. Yep. So you'd have to look through our neighbor's yard to see my back.
Oh, whatever. So this is two houses down.
Yes, exactly. Okay. and she decided that she was going to stop me by calling out her husband's name.
Dale!
As in, like, who do you say, Neil?
Dale.
Dale. No. I'm not going to say the name, but it was like, it was very clear to alert me that people are in the vicinity. She didn't say anything. We didn't have any, there was no conversation. And all I could think of is, well, that was a close call. And I remember trying to explain it to my wife because I felt as though in these situations, you don't want them to find out and then ask you if this happened. The move always is to address the issue before it comes back. You know what I'm saying?
That's the beauty of the bucket. You can do it in the comfort of your own space. You take it out.
Don't
dump it out,
want to it smell out. A bucket, a urine bucket.
I'm
I don't
not
want
saying
that.
To leave a fucking urine bucket.
I don't want to smell it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know it. I don't want to know. I don't want anything to do with it. I told you this once. I told you 100 times. I hate the human body and the insides. I don't want to know. Wow. I want it to be. Okay. I don't want to know. You know. All right. So I told her only because, and I'm trying to explain this to her thinking it's going to be funny and it's not. And it's just like, next thing you know, she's just like, well, why didn't you go to that? And it was a whole bucket of worms, and you're probably right. And then it didn't stop me though, because I thought, once again, I think she'll never think I'll do it again. She never think that this
she's
will happen
just
again.
Sitting there watching.
And they ended up moving, but at the same time, and I don't blame myself for them moving, but it was an embarrassing situation. And,
she's just like in her reading nook.
She was looking out the window. She's a little nosy. She was being a little nosy, and I feel as though she wanted
action.
You can't if you're a next door neighbor. You can't, and you're two houses down. You can't yell into someone's yard who's by a bush who you think might be taking a whiz. You can't chastise them for that. That's crazy.
No,
so what you have to, you can't do that. You can't be yelling, hey, I see you over there, two houses down, with your back to me, and I'm assuming you're taking a leak. You can't do that. We've spent enough time on
who's jerking off.
hey, I was trying to hide that part. Joke's on you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the next question comes.
We just got things.
I'm just fucking jumping out of that one. Before
we
get
to
that,
we just got the explicit stamp right there.
We got the explicit $3.99, ladies and germs. $3.99, you get the explicit. Now, guys, before we get into the next one, we're going to talk about our friends at Indossi USA, makers of Rhino-Wit. Rhino-Wit's the best sandpaper there is, just period. Done. It was started out for the auto body community, and then the knife making community realized that this is great premium sandpaper and it's worth every penny. And what you got to do is you got to go to our friends at Texas Ferry Supply, texasferrysupply.com, and then you got to load up that cart. And when you load up that cart, not only with Rhino-Wit from Indossi USA, but all that other stuff they have on the website, you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, and that's going to snap off 10% of everything. So definitely get yourself some of that Indossi USA Rhino-Wit, and definitely, for the love of God, go to Texas Ferry Supply and support my friends over our friends at Texas Ferry Supply.
Yeah.
This is an exclusive question. I didn't think we were going to get it, and we're getting it. This is from our friend Ryan Broadbeck. You know who Ryan Broadbeck is?
I think I heard of him before.
Yeah, Ryan Broadbeck is our guy. He's the creator, the founder of Broadbeck Ironworks, and he goes, hey guys, I have a dilemma. I had a customer approach me to lighten up a fighting tomahawk. The issue I'm having is they think it's a quick job, but taking a look at the tomahawk more closely, it's poorly made. Nothing lines up. The blade's twisted relative to the handle. It's forged lopsided. The handle's green from nitric acid and needs refinishing. It's a mess. How do you, quote, handle the situation? How would you charge accordingly? What would you guys do in the situation? I plan on posting the transformation on social media. Do I make sure you can't see the maker's mark in the video so it doesn't rub the maker the wrong way? He's got a dilemma. Our man Ryan's got a dilemma. What do you do?
Yeah, what do you do?
I actually, funny enough, I said, do you want us to make sure you want to you it came from the Broadbeck Ironworks Instagram page, and I was like, you sure you want this anonymous? And he's like, no, see, it's for me, it's Ryan. I was like, all right. Question number one is they're gonna know. So what do you do?
I would just focus on what they ask for and not give a shit about anything else. because that's a whole can of worms that I don't think you're interested in. That'd be what, like, were you gonna take the handle off and then like heat it back up and twist the blade in alignment with the eye, or do all this shit to like, that's not your job. I wouldn't say that's your job. I would say just focus on lightening it up, and be done with it and move the fuck on. I don't know if this is a friend or what, but. Or it says a customer, right?
Well, you can tell when somebody says, "Can you fix this? I think it's a quick job." They're basically saying this should be a quick job for you, so it's not expensive for me. that's really what that right? Like a guy says to you, "Hey, can you fix this for me? I think it's a quick job." That's like, I don't know, some sort of, you know.
Well, and there are some things that are
I'm too cheap to get really go all in.
I think there are definitely some things that are kind of beyond fixing. And it's not your responsibility to figure out how to fix it. The person owns the thing. They ask you to do one thing. Just do the one thing and move on, honestly, if you can. It sounds like it's a customer and you want to try to take care of them. But at the same time, like, what are you going to do? Rebuild the whole fucking thing? You're going to charge them like $200, $300, $400 for a few days of work and to repair this damn thing? I hope you're getting at least $100 a day, and that's what it would cost at least. And that's probably, I would be amazed if they paid more than that in the first place. So, I don't know. I would just focus on lightening it up. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things going on, and I can't really, I'm trying to figure out a way. I can't really send this to you. I'm seeing if I can send this to you. I can't really send this to you. Yeah, I can. I'm gonna send you a video of what he sent me.
Okay.
And then, let me see if I can do this fast. Here's what I said to him. I was saying, here's what you do, is you can figure out, here, I put it to you. Okay. So here's what I said, you know, here's the thing. You know, Ryan's got a business to run, so obviously this isn't like, you know, he's not trying to drum up business by repairing people's tomahawks, you know. He obviously, you know, and you know, it's good for him. I mean, he can create some content out of it. You know, he uses grinders, and he can, you know, you see the video. It's you know, look, somebody made it, and that's the way it is. What I would do is say, all right, just write down a list of all the things that need to happen if you were to do it, and then say, here's what, if you want to be done, here's what can be done. In regards to, he ain't going to fix the twist. I mean, no one's going to, you know, that would be madness, number one. Lightening up the handle, no big deal. You know, fixing, making the handle, you know, grinding down some of the blade, that's okay. Yeah. I would say, here's what I think you should do, and here's what we're going to cost. And then just be very honest right off the bat. The one thing that a lot of knife makers do, and, you know, makers in general, is they'll get something, and then what they'll do is they'll just put their heart and soul into something, and then they'll just give someone a bill. I had a friend, oh my God, I called him the grenade. Uh-oh. Because he would do these jobs, and he wouldn't tell his customer the price. He was a contractor.
That's a bad move.
Great dude, but like this was like some balls to the wall move. He would do a project or do a job, and then instead of saying, here's the scope of the work, here's what's going to cost, and I'm not going to veer off, he would do it, and then he'd give them the bill, and some of these people would, like, literally, like, fall, you know, jump out of their shoes.
Yeah.
And I've been in the room where it's like, how did this happen? How did this happen? And it got to the point where I was like, dude, you lob grenades. All you do, you lob grenades and leave the room. And he submits a bill to somebody, and they're like blown, their doors are blown off. Mm-hmm. We had a roof redone a number of years ago. It was a disaster. We went through all these companies, and then we found this one. The guy says, I'm going to give you a bill, and I'm going to give you a quote, and I'm going to stick to the quote. Well, he went on vacation, and his guys had to redo all this stuff, and they didn't say a word. Next thing you know, it was $18,000 higher than what he told it was going to be.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was bad. This was years ago, and we were pissed.
Holy shit. He was pissed. It shouldn't have cost that much in the first place.
Well, because it completely stripped down job.
Oh God. Oh, it wasn't just, you guys just were like pre-sheeting and everything?
Oh, it was like taking down a slate roof and putting a new roof on. Fuck. You know, we had to do it. You know? And the guy, you know, threw a grenade at us, and we were to kill him. And we ended up negotiating the price down, but it was like, that's no way to do business. No. You know, and there are a lot of knife makers too who there's a lot of mechanics who do that. There's a lot of knife makers who do that. A lot of people who are just like, well, you know, I spent all this time and I spent all this energy and your fucking thing was really fucked up. And yeah, but then you didn't say anything. So what I would do in the situation, I would take a look at that handle, I'd take a look at the knife or the tomahawk, and I would say, all right, what do you want done? Well, I want the blade to be thinned down. Okay, I'll thin the blade down. What else you want to be done? All right, here's what you should do, and here's how much it's going to cost. And then you have to try to figure out a way in which you're very, very clear with them in regards to the scope of the work and what it's going to cost. Now, Ryan, he can use this as content. It doesn't, I mean, he's not too worried about it, but it is interesting because, you know, most of the guys who, you know, if you have a tomahawk and you're obviously not skilled enough to fix the problem yourself and you give it to someone, you think, all right, well, Ryan's got a grinder company. I'm sure he just like snaps his fingers and the grinders grab the fucking tomahawk out of his hands and do the work for him.
Right.
Or he just gives it to one of his peons. He's not going to charge me much. And you've got to be clear. And when you have also, this is for all you makers out there who get these like refurbs. You've got to be able to read between the lines of how people present it. If someone says to you, I got this tomahawk. I'm wondering if you could fix it down. I think it's going to be a quick job. Anytime someone intimates that something shouldn't be too hard and they don't know how to do it, what they're saying is, I don't want to pay a lot of money. And I'm assuming you know magic. And they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay your union rates. You know? I mean, it's totally true. Yeah. I don't think it's a big deal. You know?
Oh, it's not that big of a deal. It should be real
Yeah, it's
quick.
Not that big of a deal. It should be very easy for you, right?
Yeah.
You've gotten those. Come on. Tell the truth.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I guess I would advise not only Ryan, but anybody, to be careful with your time. I concede, like, if the person's like, I was hoping you could just like grind away some of the material to lighten up the blade. Maybe you donate that. Maybe you don't. Maybe you charge just like a little bit. Again, because it's like, it sounds like it's a customer of yours who's got other work from somebody else. Whatever. You decide what feels comfortable for you. But once you start going into like something that's a full day's worth of work or a couple or 3 days worth of work, you can't be donating that. But I guess you still got to make that call for yourself. But at the same time, like, that's a lot of time.
I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this whole concept. And it happened to me this past week. So I have a customer who's been buying for me for a number of years.
Yeah.
And he bought a new knife. And he said to me, you know, I bought a knife from you back in 2021. And it's just my hands are big and I'm finding myself not being comfortable with my old knife. I'm buying a new knife and I want to, he wasn't making a point about it. And he said, and he was just talking about, I want the new knife to be different than the old knife because the old knife, the handle's too thin and it's kind of uncomfortable to use. So I made him the new knife and I said, what's wrong with the old knife? And he goes, no. And I said, I have an idea. Send me the old knife. I'm put on a new handle. And he's like, well, I don't know if I want to do the investment. I'm like, I'll do it. I'll do it for free. I'll do it for free.
Okay.
And it was a walnut handle. I have walnut, no problem. I cut the handle off. We just, you know, put the new handle on. I made it bigger for his hands. I made it closer to his newer knife. And he says, you sure? And I'm like, absolutely. I got you. And in my mind, I'm thinking, wow. So we cut the handle off, made a new handle, put it on, glued it up, sanded it. I would say probably all day it was most likely that repair was 2 hours maximum. Maybe. Okay. Maybe 2 hours worth of work. Maybe.
Okay.
And, you know, Corby and the walnut and all that stuff. And I'm just like, this is a good customer. You're going to come back.
Yeah.
He, before this podcast,
sent me a message. Customer retention.
Well, I mean, our business is all repeat. I mean, our business is almost 90% repeat
customer retention.
80%, 85%.
For sure.
So, and I thought, guy's been buying knives for me from 2021, you know? And I'm just like, it's good business, whatever. He just called me up. He just sent me a message. He said, I need to buy a knife and a fork for my son. All of a sudden, when you give this kind of like good service, or you're doing something that you're conscientious of the fact that it might be beneficial to you and for going forward, it's hard to beat good customer service. It's harder to keep a customer than to get a new one.
Absolutely.
Is that the right? No, that's not the right. It's harder to get a new customer than to keep an old one. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to advocate for is just, you know, the makers got to ultimately do what's right for them.
Right.
I think if you are, like if you're in your position, and sure, it costs you some time, costs you materials, but that customer retention is, especially when you recognize that a lot of your customers or your business is repeat business from previous customers, of course it makes 100%, totally makes sense to do that. Especially if it's only a couple hours of work, all day. I guess not everybody's in that position, but I think,
I agree.
Especially when it's somebody else's work, though. Like, this isn't Ryan's work, it sounds like. And so at a certain point, like, honestly, that fucking, the customer should be reaching out to the original maker.
But there might be some weirdness there,
I guess. Obviously, or the original maker was like, too fucking late. You bought it. It's yours now.
Or obviously, I mean, you know, that's happened before where people are just, or they're too afraid. I've had customers, I've had customers who have bought a knife from me. And I've even said about this, customers like, oh, I know all about Damascus. And I had some Damascus made by our man Bob Rankin. Shout out to Bob Rankin, one of the greatest of all time. And the guy's like, oh, I know all about Damascus. No, you don't have to tell me nothing. And he... I only use full tang Damascus knives. And I know all about it. And I told him, I was like, don't use this. I know all about it. So he was coating with olive oil, coating the blade with olive oil when he wasn't using it because he thought that that was going to protect it. Wow. I mean, I might as well have used muriatic acid because he's fucking turned into a complete disaster. Yeah. And I even talked about this a number of years ago. He was too afraid to tell me because he'd given me the I know all about it, you know. He was insulted. He was insulted that I suggest that he doesn't know all about it. He was just like, I know all about it, Damascus. I only use the finest olive oil.
Do you know who I am?
You know who I am? I'm Mr. My name is Damascus. That's my name, Damascus. I'm Dan Mascus. My name is Daniel Mascus.
Daniel Mascus.
Daniel Mascus. I'm Daniel Mascus. Don't you know? I know all about it. Sent it to a guy who is a knife finisher in the area. And then that guy reached out to me and he said, because he listens to this podcast and he goes, I just want you to know this guy got this knife from you and he fucked it up. And he didn't say that, but he kind of, you know, and you know, all he had to say was, he'd been keeping it, you know, nice with the olive oil and it turned into like a fucking anchovy salad. And he let me know that he's like, I feel very badly that I'm going to redo this. I'm like, do your thing, man. The guy was too afraid to tell me. So it could be the same situation. Now, the last thing that Ryan asks is, should I keep? I hate the knife. He don't like that tomahawk at all. You know, so he's like, should I leave out the maker's mark because I don't want to embarrass the hatchet maker? It's a good ass question right there. Question.
Yeah, I guess you could try to cover it up or somehow not focus on it, but.
And when you're doing the restoration video, you could also say, look at this piece of shit this guy brought in, and then focus right on the touch mark. That's the move, Ryan. You go, look at this piece of shit that, you know, like Dan Mascus made.
Is it right there on the top?
Can you imagine? Oh, wow. Some guy brought this hunk of shit into the shop, and I'm going to fix it.
Piece of shit?
Yeah. Look at this piece of shit. I'll fix it.
Well, and I'm looking at the blade to help describe people. Oh, what's that?
I mean, you got to say, look at this piece of shit. No
respectfully.
Offense to...
Respectfully.
Respectfully.
This piece of shit came in.
Look at this. I'm going to do this restoration on this hunk of shit.
The video starts. It's a top-down view of the eye. And it looks like it has a hammer, actually, on the back of it. And then the blade is kind of slightly curved. I wonder if this was a bit weld. Because then that would mean the body of the axe is mild steel or something like that. And I wonder if the user, the customer, like, fucking slammed it into something it wasn't supposed to. Because it's a fighting hatchet or tomahawk, right?
I don't know.
He's probably doing a lot of fighting with that tomahawk. But anyways,
I got a feeling.
I could see somebody trying to slam it into a tree or throwing it like it's a fucking, you know, throwing in the tomahawk and it hitting. But if it's got that hard edge but a soft body, like I could see, because that bit, like the body of it's only like maybe a quarter of an inch or just over. I could see that bending over if it's not hardened steel.
You know what I like what
somebody
you're doing?
Abusing the fuck out of the steel.
I like what you're doing because you know what I like?
I'm blaming the customer. No,
I like you're blaming the customer. That's the best. Yeah, it was. That's what now, Ryan. Here's what you do. You say, "Look at this hunk of shit that there was a beautiful hatchet before oh the customer. The customer fucking blew its doors off.
This stupid fuck.
This guy. This guy. You know, don't blame the guy. I don't know. But speaking of which, I have to tell you that our friend. I don't know if you know Niles Ogren. Niles Ogren.
Yeah.
Niles Ogren on Instagram is a good dude, and he has a new book out called Beginning Guide for Forging Axes.
Oh,
does a great job.
Mine
just arrived. It's really well done. Niles is a great guy, and maybe what the Tomahawk guy should have bought Niles' book, and then we wouldn't be in this situation. Yeah. So, look, you know what? I'm sure whatever Ryan does will be fine. And with that said, if you were to use, if you needed to fix your belts or you need to fix your axes and stuff like that, and you need products and you're looking for belts and all that stuff, you can go to Maritime Knife Supply. Maritime Knife Supply is your one-stop shop for knife makers and metal workers, steel belts, handle material, tools, forges, kilns, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. They're a Canadian distributor of all sorts of things, including Broadbeck Ironworks and all that stuff. They have the Rhino Wet. They got all that stuff. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and you will get 10% off your 10-pack of abrasive belts, and I just ordered some belts from our man Lawrence, and Lawrence should be, as this comes out, he should be on his way to Can Iron. Can Iron is on the 7th. I think it's the 8th through the maybe the 8th to the 10th. I don't know. I think it's the coming up weekend of this. And Lawrence Lake and Maritime Knife Supply are the sponsors of Can Iron. So God bless our friends at Can Iron. We got more questions. We got feedback. We can do whatever you want.
I mean, we only answered like fucking two questions.
Okay, so what? That's good. We had a conversation. That's better. Yeah, this next one we saved for you. We were going to do
what,
it last week.
From Tom?
From Tom. Okay. I'll read it to you. Read it to you. Because this one, we didn't do, Craig and I didn't do it because we thought we should say this for Mareko. Mareko, now you're here. Tom.
I love it when you read to me because it's like listening to an audiobook.
Hey, baby.
You're really good.
Speaking of audiobooks, you know what I'm listening to right now?
No,
I'm totally in love with
50 Shades of Grey.
No. Fucking, what do you think? I'm going to run a marathon with a heart on the whole time? What do you think?
I didn't know that thing still worked.
That, hey, baby. hey, don't worry about that. I'm just saying, don't worry about that. But I'll tell you what, I'm listening to the Bruce Springsteen autobiography, read by Bruce Springsteen. Fascinating.
Okay, fascinating. So it sounds like this guy who's got fucking gravel. He's been eating gravel his whole life.
I do have to say, it sounds amazing. I mean, it's great. And I have to say that I'm really inspired by, you know, we were talking last week about Ozzy Osbourne. And the interesting thing about Ozzy, and same thing with the same thing with Bruce, is very similar to what's going on with a lot of our listeners who are trying to get become, you know, proficient in knife making to the point where they have a business that they're happy about. What's interesting is both in the Bruce Springsteen book and the Ozzy Osbourne book is our Ozzy Osbourne's life. Ozzy Osbourne was born in Birmingham. It was a factory town where it was known for you were born into the factory line and then you died on the factory line.
Oh, wow.
There was no getting out. If you lived and born in Birmingham, you're going to be in a factory. And he just had to do whatever it takes to get out. He started making flyers, put them on billboards like light poles and stuff like that to create a band. And he did whatever it took. He didn't have social media, didn't have any of that, and he forced himself to get out of that life.
Yeah.
In the Bruce Springsteen book, he's got a very interesting childhood where his dad was very abusive and narcissistic. It's also, there's a lot about, you know, how past, you know, familial trauma gets passed along.
Yeah, sure.
And one of the things was he really didn't have a very good relationship with his father, and he just really wanted to become a musician. Mm-hmm. And he did whatever it took. He failed. He got kicked out of bands. He got beat up at band. It was a really turbulent time, but he did whatever it took to become a success he wanted to be. And I found that it to be very, very inspiring for other knife makers, especially, you know, we still hear people saying, like, I'm trying to do this business, but Instagram is giving me troubles. you got to do river takes. And I find that these outside of the knife making world is far more inspiring in regards to having less and figuring out how to become successful. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah
Bruce.
Yeah, I've actually seen that book in Audible and I've been curious about it, but I actually am a big fan of The Boss.
It's great. It's long. I mean, it's 18 hours. So, like, I'm putting a lot of time in on the road. You know, I'm doing about 20 miles a week now.
Right. Wow. So I need 20 miles.
Oh, dude. This week starts. This is the week. This is the fourth week of training, and I'm starting to get into hell.
Oh, I see. By foot. Right. Yeah.
Oh, by foot. Yeah, by foot.
But you're talking about you're driving 20 miles. I was like, wow.
No, I'm running 20 miles. Yeah, I have to run on Saturday. I have to run 10 miles.
Okay.
That's a lot. I run 20 miles, at least 20 miles a week. Now it's just growing. So I got to listen to something. So
Bruce.
Back to Tom.
What is that? 3 hours?
Says, pardon me?
3-4 hours for 20 miles?
Oh God, you're out of your mind. At my pace right now, I'm shooting for under 5 hours.
Okay.
Now I'm at the under 5 hours. I really want to do 4:30, but I don't think it's going to happen. But you never know. My pace is getting faster. I'm doing better, but it's probably going to be, I would say, between 4:30 and I'm hoping for 4:30 to 4:45, and doing better than that. But regardless. All right, back to Tom. Tom's been waiting. Tom's sitting there with his bucket. He's like, I'm about to take a piss. You guys don't start reading. I got to go. All right, Tom says, hi, questions for you all. I'm a hobbyist kitchen knife maker trying to get better at shaping handles with a mix of flat facets that transition into curves. Any tips on how to approach this style or any good videos/courses that you'd recommend for learning clean shaping and transitions? Ooh.
It's tricky, that is for sure. Yeah. So when I'm doing like my Japanese cowboy handles or any kind of blend of facets and contours, I'm doing a lot of that work using a rotary platen, actually. And it's very having that, especially with finer grip belts, when you get up into the J-Flex, those belts are really thin. And if you have any hardware, like a mechanical fastener, like a pin or rivets, or you have an integral bolster, anywhere where that metal is adjacent to the wood, it's very easy to undercut that. So that's one potential problematic issue when it comes to contouring. So having that extra belt on the rotary platen as a extra backing to help support the belt is really helpful in getting things really smoothed out. And that's just in general, that's really good for fully contoured handles or otherwise. But for when it comes to those facets and holding those facets, that using that using that rotary platen and that backing belt really helps. I do most of the rough sculpting with like a 60 or a 120. But you know, a fresh 220 on a piece of wood will remove material really fast. So you want to be careful, but get in there with that to get that work done. If not, maybe with a 400, but even a fresh 400, especially in some of these corners, like when you're breaking the corners from the block and trying to swoop that down into like the pinky swell area or something like that, trying to keep that facet, but get that curvature. It can be tricky, and it's easy to accidentally wash that out. I eventually would like to put together some sort of demonstration, but it's really hard thing to show and exemplify. I've actually at Maker Camp, I've taught the handle sculpting, I think at least a couple times, or at least once. I can't remember if I've done it a couple times. I think at least a couple times. Anyways, but it's a really hard thing to try to like really articulate and demonstrate without somebody actually physically being there,
right,
side by side. I will say there is a maker named Jelle Hosenberg. Mm-hmm. He is based out of Ireland, even though he, I believe, is from the Netherlands or Denmark originally.
Big difference.
There is.
Those people don't get mad when you don't confuse them.
They're not the same.
They're not the same. Eric Markman, don't be mad. Don't send in a message, Eric Markman. Don't send in a message.
I'm just saying, he's from one of those countries. I can't remember which one it is. That's all I'm saying.
And it doesn't matter.
Oh, fuck.
Relax, Eric Markman. Just chill out, baby. Chill out, baby. Just relax. Put them wooden boots on and just chill out. No, yeah.
He is... he's doing the... and go check him out. His Instagram is... it's... I think it's spelled J-E-L-L-E. J-E-L. Oh, here we go. Oh, it's his last name. So it's Hazenberg Knives. It's H-A-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G Knives. All one word. Yella Hazenberg is his name. You go check out his page. You can see all the wild facets and contours and stuff that he's blending. He's doing majority of this by hand with files and rasps. And he's taking his fucking time. And it takes time, but holy shit, he's getting some really amazing contours and line activity, facets, and some of this stuff, like, the only way you can get it is by doing it by hand. I'm looking at a post right here. It looks like he's using a file or a rasp of some sort that's essentially the equivalent of, like, a 20 grit belt. It's pretty coarse, but he's blasting through this stuff, and just... bringing it up with hand sand, with hand files and hand sand or sandpaper, and probably some sanding sticks that are made to suit the contours that he's shaping. You don't have to do it on the machine. In fact, it's probably trying to do it on the machine is probably one of the more difficult ways to approach it. I've just done it for fucking ever, and so I've got it down, but. I would actually really encourage people who want to do more like faceted Western style handles to step off the machine and go a little bit slower by hand and use files and sandpaper. And you are going to get great
results. Excellent idea. Excellent idea because
slow down.
Everybody wants to be Bruce Springsteen, but they don't realize that Bruce Springsteen sucked for a long, long time before he was Bruce Springsteen. You know, kicked out of bands, girls didn't like him. They got booed off the stage. He sucked for a long, long time until he became the boss. So if you want to be the boss of your faceted handles, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
I love the idea of using files, especially if Tom's a hobbyist. Right. I think everybody gets a little bit too much like, I want to be proficient and I want to be good, but I want to be fast.
And it's so much better.
You get such a better understanding if you do it with files,
yeah,
because you're going to be able to kind of understand, get a deep understanding of how it's done. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, you know, maybe if I use a slack belt here, I'll be able to. Right. Like when I carve down the handles here, I have two broadbecks going at the same time, one with a platen that's perched out a little bit, and I use that so I can hit the spine, make sure I can hit the spine without hitting the spine of the knife, without hitting the blade part top of the spine, and then I can make my changes. But then I know that on the outside I'm good, and then I hop to a disc grinder so I can round everything off, and then I go to a slack belt. So I'm only got three machines, but it took me a long time to figure out my stages in order to get it. But you have to have a game plan, and I think that if you start off with files, it's going to give you the deep understanding that you'll be able to translate to different machines.
For sure. And actually, Yella, on his page, again, it's Hazenberg Knives, he has some photos of a lot of progression photos. He shows how he marks out the different facets and how he's working. He doesn't necessarily... I guess he does show the knife clamped in like a knife vise. And then he's literally just... grinding away, and those files, like, with practice, I bet these handles actually go surprisingly quickly. Often for me, my handles, my Japanese cowboy style handles, the faceted westerns, they take 3 to 4 hours from block to hand sanding to finish hand sanding. And I think you could start on the machine to do the gross removal of, or the majority of the removal of material, and then jump off the machine, get on there with some rasps, and honestly, like, from a rasp to probably an 80 grit to a 120 to 400, or sorry, to 220 to 400 or 600, fucking, you can have a handle sculpted out pretty damn quickly. I don't think there's, I think there's a lot of merit in doing it by hand off the machine. And I think people would get, have a better, actually get better results, especially regarding like the contours down at the pinky swell. A lot of people have a hard time getting in there and getting that swoop. But if you do it off the machine with some files, you just like literally take like 10, 15 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes. You're going to be so much more happier with that, with the result than what you would have done, tried to attempt to get off the machine. I've been inundating Jeff with a few different posts. They're pretty good.
Oh, just now I'm not on it, but yeah. I take it with you.
Yeah.
Now, a couple things. One is you got to credit Mr. Holland, Hasenberg.
Yeah.
Yella.
Yella.
Yeah, you gotta, don't be learning his tricks and saying, look what I developed.
Fuck
that. Shit
yeah.
happens. That shit fucking yeah, it. All of a sudden, people are doing like how to make serrated knives, and they're yeah. like, they're doing my whole thing, and then just like, I came up with this idea. And it might as well be wearing a Fader Knives hat while you're doing it, ladies and gentlemen. So give the guy credit. And the other thing is our man Jordan Lamote also uses files a lot yeah. too. He's a great resource.
Yeah.
But if you were, I'm asking you a question, Rick. That's if it. You were to use a grinder to do all the work, what's the grinder you'd use?
I would use my Broadback.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. Thanks to the help of, actually, the platen I developed with those guys, the Morocco platen. It really helps to, especially heavy contouring, to work the handle very symmetrically. I was very thankful for these guys being receptive in this design concept that I came up with them. And I think it's kind of become their standard platen now for their grinders. And it's, I think I've gotten nothing but positive feedback on people in regards to using that for contouring and sculpting. If you go to broadbeckironworks.com, go to their website, get what you need, whether it's platens, tool arms, whole ass packages and everything, grinder packages, you put in, Knife Talk, I believe, right now
Knife, Talk,
Knife 10. Talk 10. Yeah. I couldn't remember if the. They had something else going on. But anyways,
you get the whole ass thing.
You get the whole ass thing 10% off. They also sell belts. They sell sharpening systems. They have sewing systems for leather sheaths. These guys are here for the knife maker. Go check them out. Again, broadbeckironworks.com. Make sure you put in Knife Talk 10. Save yourself 10%. You are checking out.
All right, I think we need some listener feedback just
let's
to kind
it.
Of
yeah,
do a little
it.
Bit of palate cleanser. Guys, if you want to send in your messages, send in your questions, send in your listener feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. That's where you can interact with the show. And once again, next week is the 400th episode. Send us your audio messages. If something was funny, something you remembered, you have a little quick story, send in an audio message. We got you squared away. So the first listener feedback comes from our man, Brigham Kendall, GSL. He said... We were talking about AI, and now a little backup. Okay. Brigham Kendall is fantastic, super supportive, one of the nicest guys, very supportive of other people. Knife making is his hobby. However, he has figured out a way to bring his knife making into his office, and he actually hand sands and works on his knives in his cubicle, which is total madness.
You imagine him with the rasp and just how much dust that would create. It'd be such a fucking mess.
You know what would be funny is if
if he has got like a tiny air collection system too.
I would like all I would like is a picture of him sitting in his cubicle.
Yeah.
Brigham, you gotta do this.
You gotta set us up.
I want you to be sitting at your cubicle. It's not gonna be a good photograph, but you're getting the picture. I want your hand sanding jig on your table. I want you to sit in there with your legs spread and your hand sanding or whatever. And I want your headset on your head. And I want you to be recording your question for Knife Talk in your office. Hey, guys, I'm having this hard time with my pinky swell. And then your boss is back and says, what is he doing?
His boss will be taking the video.
get the boss to take the video. We need pictures. We need pictures. It ain't happened. So Brigham GSL says, we had a big meeting at work about using AI for work. They want us to use it more and be more creative with it. Okay. Now if I can just figure out a way to get AI to do my hand sanding, LOL. So he's already, not only is he working from his job, he's trying to get his job's AI to do more hand sanding for him. Congratulations. Nobody games the system. without getting in trouble like Brigham Kendall. I mean, he is untouchable. He's the Teflon Don. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Teflon Don, is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what they used to call John Gotti, the Teflon Don. They never got him. They got him at the end, but that's fine. All right, next comes from...
Couldn't get it to stick.
The next, yeah, that's right. And again, don't stick. The next one comes from a man, Ben Sechrist. Now, last week, I don't know if you heard it, but there was our man Hutch Knives made a point of the fact that when you get the 3M, you know, the dust collection or the respirators, it's like a astronaut's helmet with the pack on your back.
Oh, the Versaflow.
What happens is, I think we talked about it last week, is... What happens is the intake is right by your butthole. So if you've been eating, and we've covered this a lot, this is not a first timer. This happens a lot. Yep. So you're eating them burritos, you have some gas. All of a sudden you're gonna end up asphyxiating yourself with your own filth. So we talked about that, and then Ben Sechrist has wants Hutch to know. Here's a tip for the 3M PAPR respirator users. They make a backpack strap for it. Oh. It's a must-have for gassy folks. I think it's more comfortable than the waistband/fanny pack, too.
I'm into that.
So
I would have to wear it either on my hip, but if they got the shoulder harness, yeah. I'd rather wear it on my back.
Do you have one of those?
No, but I've used them. When I was over, especially, I've spent the most time inside of one when I was working at Fingal's shop last year. And I was pleasantly surprised at how enjoyable it was to use. Thankfully, Fingal did a great job cooking meals, and so I wasn't super gassy.
Oh, boy.
But I could see that being a problem for folk.
Speaking of which, I'm going to see Fingal, and then when this comes out, I'm going to see him this coming week.
Oh, shit.
He's coming to New York for a film festival.
What?
And sent me a message, and he wants me to be there. Hell so yeah. I'm going to...
Is he part of his documentary?
Well, they did a short film. He did a short film about Gabin, or... I'm not 100% sure, but he did film that he's involved in is in a film festival.
That's great.
And it's going to be in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. He sent me a message. He says, hey, darling, I want to know if you want to come down. So I might drag my kid with me, and I'm going to finally get to meet Fingal down in Brooklyn. So...
Wait, you didn't meet Fingal before?
No.
A couple of years
back?
Where
would I have met him?
Oh, that was before you went back to Blade Show. He was at Blade Show a few years back.
Oh, no, I didn't. I wasn't there for that. I didn't see him. I didn't meet him. Yeah. So I'm going to go see old Fingal.
Be prepared. He's taller than you.
I don't care.
Bigger hugs. Big man, big hug.
He's fine. He said to me, he's like, we're going to go out. And I'm like, wait. I got to go to work the next day. Relax, big dog. So I might bring my daughter with me, but I'm looking forward to being old Fingal in Brooklyn. So Ben Sechrist, that's for you. Next one comes from our man, Bald Man Knife and Tool. That's Brent. Have you ever met him? Blade Show? Good dude.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have. Yeah.
He works with Brian House. He wrote in a microaggression. This is a very good mic. So microaggression is something people say that they might not realize is insulting, and it is.
Okay.
So here's a microaggression when seeing friends and family, right? So you're seeing friends and family, and one of them says, how's your little knife thing going? I hate that shit. I hate that shit. I actually
because I can relate.
I have a story with a friend of mine who I went to college with. My wife and I went to college with this guy, and he became a pretty big TV star. Pretty big TV star.
Who is it?
Don't worry about it.
I think you told us before. Just tell us again.
All right. It was Josh Radner from How I Met Your Mother. Great guy. He and I are friends. We're tight. He's great.
Great.
But years ago... When we moved, we got out of college and we moved to 14th Street. And then we saw him at a party. It was a college party, and friends were all together. And he was on Broadway. He was doing he was the lead in The Graduate. He was the lead in The Graduate on Broadway.
Oh, fun! I love that. Was a great movie.
Yeah, great movie. And he was the lead, and he took over after Jason Biggs. Great guy. So I don't know. He might have been a little punchy. He might have been a little whatever. And I was also very arrogant at the time. That was the peak of arrogance. Peak of arrogance. I'm like, I'm young, good
looking. No longer stealing your girl, but arrogant as fuck.
I'm not stealing your girl, but I'm like, that was the height of young, good looking Jeff. That was the height of arrogance. I was working for all these steel sculptors at a studio in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I was going to all these art exhibits, art shows, and all these openings and restaurants and all this shit. I was hot shit, and I knew it, and I felt it, and it took me a long time to get over that. Meanwhile, so I'm like massive ego, and now he's massive ego because he's on Broadway. He's you know, everyone said no one's gonna be a famous actor. You know, he ain't gonna be a famous actor. He's gonna be waiting tables or something. Now he's on Broadway. Meanwhile, I got my studio in Brooklyn, and you know, everyone said art major ain't gonna make it, and I'm. So you're talking two colossal egos walking in a room.
Right.
Colossal. And I'm not 100% sure who's bigger. It's fine. And he comes up to me and he sees me in Hill and he goes, oh, how's playing house? I had to be pulled off of him. I was just like,
house?
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you right now. As we used to say, I'm going to weld you into your car. That's an old story. My boss at the time got in an argument with a guy in the building, and the guy in the building and he are screaming at each other. And my boss said, if you don't fucking stop right now, I'm going to weld you into your studio. No one will ever find you. So I didn't physically go after him. I might have said something. I might have been seething. That was a microaggression.
Let's go into that. Why did you react so?
Because all of a sudden it's like you.
Why did you take it so personally?
How's you're still playing house? Playing house. You're with your girlfriend. You finally move into an apartment together. You're working on this relationship, and then somebody just frivolizes it. Frivolize? I like frivol. I don't think that's a word, but I like it. He frivolized it, and I didn't like it. He said it in a very dismissive way, and it was just like, oh, are you still playing house? I don't like that.
I got you.
Fuck that shit. But we are fucking, dynamite. Radner's my man. And that was a microaggression.
Yeah, no, I've had a lot of people over the years. Like, even still, I just, like, last weekend, I was hanging out with a kid over at this local community event thing. Saw somebody I hadn't seen in a while. I'm like, oh, you still doing that knife thing? It's like, yep, it's going on 15 years.
I just don't understand.
Still doing it.
I just don't understand why people would talk like that. Like, it just doesn't, like.
You don't have a real job like me, you know, fucking waste management? There's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
People don't like unorthodox jobs.
Yeah.
And they think that. It almost as if they're projecting onto you that you're a slacker or you're a trustafarian or you're someone who isn't serious, or they're projecting onto you all this stuff that's just not, it's not nice. You know, it's not nice. It's de-importantmentalized. No, that's not a word either.
You're doing great.
It's hot in this car, dude.
Fader's Dictionary over here.
It's de-importantizing. It's de-importantizing what you're doing. Don't let anyone de-importantize what you're doing.
I like these Faderisms. Have you ever heard of Yogi Berra?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, the Yogi-isms, all his Yankee, fucking... Yeah.
He said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. That was what he used to say.
He said all kinds of dumb shit.
He said, when they ask me if I like, I want my pizza cut into 6 slices or 8 slices, I say, you better cut it into 6 because I can't eat 8. That's another good one. There's another one. There's a few of them. I mean, when the fat lady.
The yogi-isms.
It ain't over till it's over.
Good.
It ain't over till it's over. It ain't over till the fat lady sings. That's a good one. That's a real good one. Because that was the fat woman who used to sing at the end. And then it ain't over till the fat lady sings. That's a fucking great one. That's underused, by the way. Walker Knives says, I was just listening to the bit about almost bad moments in the shop, and this belt blew up in my face as I was listening to it.
Yeah, been there.
Actually, it happened to me with the J-Flex belts more than anything. Because that seam, you're working on it, blah, blah, blah. Sage Mambuka, our man Sage Mambuka says, sup, beautiful boys. I have one of those. Well, that was almost bad. A few years back, I was cleaning up the back of the heel / Ricasso area of my blade I was making for my buddy. The problem was that I was using the big wheel attachment on my Broadbeck. As I dipped down to get deep into that heel, the tang caught the rubber tread of the side of the wheel, which then torpedoed the knife at my head.
Yikes.
It caught me in the cheekbone right below my eye. Luckily, it was smacked me in the dome with the butt of the tang and not the tip of the knife. Otherwise, I'd be toes up in the shop. Haven't made that oopsie like that since. Have a good day, boys. Stay safe out there. Yep. And I said, Jesus. And he says, I made it out with just a little kiss below my eye. Sincerely, domed up in the shop.
Jeez. All right.
Pro. And then...
safe people.
And then, yeah. I mean, that's...
You know. I found another yogiism.
Go ahead.
What is it? Baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical.
That's pretty good. Yeah, no, he really said some fucking crazy things. And I actually met Yogi Berra once.
Oh, yeah?
And now, before we get into my meeting of Yogi Berra, let's talk about a little bit of Damasteel. Damasteel is the best pattern welded stainless steel Damascus there is. Great stuff with our friends Carly and all them guys making the beautiful Damasteel. Go to damasteel.se, and then if you sign up, you can use the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off all your Damasteel. And then get involved with the Damasteel Invitational. We're going to be doing that. It's a great show. You can listen back to the Damasteel Invitational shows. And you can participate, and you can also do the build-along. There's a build-along part. You can look on their website, and then you can find a build-along and get involved. So definitely get yourself some of that Damasteel. And while we're here in Sweden, let's talk about our friends at Tormek. Celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black's TH sharpening system. This stuff is, I love it. I love the machine. I've learned to be, it's made me a better knife maker. I use this. It's a water-cooled sharpening system. They have it for hobbyists. They have it for professionals. And they also have ones for your kitchen. So they're really great. And if you go to Tormek, Tormek.com, you can check it out. And you can go to Tormek_Sharpie on Instagram to see what the fuss is about and then get involved with them. The customer service is great. Their guys are terrific. And I'm all in on Tormek. I got a Yogi Berra.
I'm reading these yogiisms. And pardon I keep me? Hearing, you remember Pussy? From
do I remember Pussy?
Sorry.
Do I remember Pussy?
From The Sopranos.
Hey, I know Pussy, baby. What do I remember?
From The Sopranos.
It? Oh, Big Pussy.
Big Pussy. I keep hearing Pussy, all these like, quotes in his fucking voice. They crack me up.
So when I was younger, I found out, I heard that my mother loved, my mother was younger, she loved Yogi Berra. And my grandmother she hated the fact that she thought that Yogi Berra was such a lowlife. And she hated the fact that my mother loved Yogi Berra. And years later, my uncle took my mother and I to a spring training game, and Yogi Berra was the manager of the team at the time. And my uncle says, I'd really love to get an autograph from your mom because she just loved Yogi Berra so much. And we go down there, and Yogi Berra signing autographs and stuff like that. And my uncle, he says, hey Yogi, you know, my sister's, you know, had such a crush on you once for her whole life, and I was wondering if you could write your name to Kathy. And he goes, I don't write no names. And that was it. He wrote on the back of a card. He wrote Yogi Berra. He goes, I don't write no names. I don't write no names.
For years,
my uncle and I would just talk about how Yogi Berra said, I don't write no names. So
funny.
We're in the after show now, right?
Are we doing that? That's what's
yeah, up? Yeah. Guys, listen. Let's close this bitch down. I mean, close this episode 399, ladies and germs. We will have Craig Lockwood back next year. We'll be celebrating the 400th episode of Knife Talk, number one knife-related podcast in German Fest planet, whether you like it or not, with you. Wherever you're listening to this, do me a favor. If you listen to this and you have the ability to give us a 5-star review and write a review, wherever you listen to us, it helps us. So do that and then get involved, send in your questions, write something nice to us about how this podcast affects your life. In a positive way or a negative way, I mean, I'll take negative.
Ruin my life.
if we've ruined your life, we need to rectify that situation. Episode 400, we fix your life. So, guys, we'll see you next week. So, what are you watching? Anything good?
Oh God, I just finished 1923, which is apparently a prequel series to the Yellowstone series, which I have not watched yet.
Is it good?
So 1923 was good. The first season was good. The second season, the acting was kind of bad.
Right.
Especially with any of the, like, the supporting characters was just like super stiff and rigid. It looked like some fucking B film kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
It was funny. But it was good. Otherwise, my kid, as we're recording this, when this comes out on Monday, it's my kid's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Yeah.
So we're going to be, there's a local state park that's got a really great lake and campground we're going to go hang out at.
Fantastic.
And so we'll be there from Friday to Monday morning, Friday evening to Monday morning, cooking the campfire breakfasts and stuff like that. And then I'm grilling up burgers. We're doing dinner and stuff over at the park for his friends and stuff. He's got this whole theme figured out. He's really into dogs. And where we live right now, we're just renting, so we can't have dogs there.
Right.
But he just is obsessed with dogs. And so he's made up this like imaginary world with his friends that he plays this game at school called Papania, and it's just like this it's like this alternate universe where everybody's dogs, and so there's dog versions of everybody, and so that's the theme of this.
Funny.
And he made the t-shirts, he designed the t-shirt print, and we got a bunch of t-shirts printed. He put together all these gift bags for all the kids. It's weird, like, kids go to birthday parties to get presents.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not even their fucking birthday.
Yeah,
it's fine.
This year you're not going to cut your foot off, right? Last year,
I got that knife in my pocket right now. Actually,
you stuck your knife in your foot.
I accidentally stuck myself. So anybody who's listening to this, if you got a second, you got a kid, or you are into Legos, or just supporting other creative people, my kid's got an Instagram. I control it, but it's called the Lego Smith, all one word.
Oh.
The Lego Smith. He's a very talented Lego builder, and we would love the support. Again, the Lego Smith. There's actually there are these like medieval Lego setups, and they have a blacksmith spot, and so there's actually a smith with an anvil and everything. It's kind of cute. But
look at you.
He's got his creative builds on there. There's only a few posts so far, but yeah, the more we can get, the better. We're trying to get that kid to become a Lego engineer someday if he wants. Right now, that's what he wants, but
all right,
we'll see.
Just, you know, be like Bruce Springsteen and just keep making Legos. This is it.
Going for it, but anyway, it should be good.
That's good. What do we do? We've been watching. My daughter's coming. When this comes out, my daughter's coming back from her college internship Saturday. So we're going to have her for 3 weeks, we're super excited. I'm just so glad she's coming home we'll only have her for 3 weeks, and then she goes back to school. But it'll be great, and we're getting ready for that. And
I gotcha.
Hillary and I have been watching The Wire. We were on the second season of The Wire. Wire is a good-ass show. Good-ass show. Second season, we like the second season.
I've heard it was good.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And we need a slow burn situation, you know? So we're going with The Wire and then watch the Yankees, and, you know, it's fucking madness. Being a sports fan is total madness.
Sure.
And it's, like, unbelievable. But in the meantime, I'm getting deeper and deeper into major marathon training. So it's like trying to find things to listen to, and you know, trying to buy, you know, not spend so much money on weird things and not fool around with supplements and all this bullshit. And I'm feeling good. And the one thing that's making me feel good the most is rest days. I did not expect recovery days to be as like therapeutic as they are.
Your fucking body needs it, dude.
Dude, I'm telling you.
You're just going to because you're basically temporarily destroying your body.
I'm telling you.
And giving
it time
to fucking build back up. And you've got to have those rest days.
I'm like, the amazing part is this particular schedule, and I've been very adamant that I'm following it. And I ran, it started about a month ago, but I started running about 2 or 3 months ago.
Right.
Just so I wouldn't be starting from scratch.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised at how good I feel. And every week it builds more and more, and then it tapers you back, and it builds up. And I'm following the directions. I'm doing what they're telling me to do. And it is amazing if you follow the plan that it just kind of keeps you over the thing. But what I'm more amazed at is how the recovery days, how they affect how good I'm running on the following days.
Yeah.
So but it's a lot of time. Like tomorrow, Saturday, I got to run. Or no, tomorrow's Friday. So Saturday, I got to run 10 miles, and I'm just trying to figure out the route. And I have this Garmin app that helps me make the mileage in my area. And it's fun, but it's a production.
Yeah.
It's a production. So, and I'm almost at my... And then you said that, I'm going to say this. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, wow, Jeff, you're running the marathon. I'm running for the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's disease. So if you want to... So I'm almost there. I'm almost at the finish line in terms of what I need to raise. I'm going to raise another $700. Go to Fader Knives and in the or Full Blast Podcast or Jeff Fader on Instagram. And then there's a link in the bio for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And put in $5, $10, $25. You put a couple hundred bucks in if you want. Mm-hmm. You do whatever you want. You get me? You finish this fucking thing off. I would love it. So I know that Michael J. Fox is going to come at me with a baseball bat if I don't cough up that rest of that dough. But I'm almost there and blah, blah, blah. Aging gracefully, my man.
Aging gracefully. That's good.
Aging gracefully.
That's good.
All right, we've done enough. Guys, next week is the 400th episode, so send in your messages and send in whatever you want, and we will see you next week. Mareko, thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.